from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll learn about a unique fundraiser for a cause that the Indiana Ballet Conservatory is putting on.
I'll find out about The Neighborhood of Saturdays, a new book by IUPUI.
And I'll get a preview of this year's original and fabulous German Fest. Plus, there'll be our calendar of events we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indiana Ballet Conservatory will be holding an inaugural fundraiser called Pulse, Point to the Cure, to raise awareness and funds for pediatric cancer research by donating to Team Joey, a Heroes Foundation program. The event will be held on Friday, October 4th. Travis DiNicola spoke with Alonia Yakuleva Randall, founding artistic director of Indiana Ballet Conservatory, Daryl Randall, percussionist, and Missy Rust, director of marketing and outreach, to learn more.
Alonia, Missy, Daryl, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to have you here on our show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is pretty interesting what you guys are doing. Often arts organizations have fundraisers for themselves because certainly they need it.
That's right.
But you guys are doing something very special as part of your fall season, in that you are, in addition to having your regular show, you're doing a special fundraising night for a very special cause that actually doesn't really have a whole lot to do with dance. It's just a really cool thing. And it's called Pulse. Dancing to the beat of our own drummer is the concert, but this is a special performance to raise money and awareness. And so tell me more about this. Who wants to jump in?
Missy.
Okay. They nominated you.
Okay. Well, I love the story behind this and what brought it alive. Actually, last year during Pulse, Dancing to the Beat of Our Own Drummer, you were kind enough to bring us here then, and we were telling you all about it. It actually went so well that one of our board members, Dr. Adam Perler, was there and was so inspired that he wanted to bring this particular production together with another love of his, which is called Team Joey. It's a Heroes Foundation program. And by doing so, he thought, why don't we raise money, funds, and awareness for Team Joey and for pediatric cancer awareness. And so that's what started this whole talk.
And that's where you get Point to the Cure, which
exactly.
is a great name. Point as in being on point, of course, with ballet, but pointing to the cure. And this is, tell me more about this Team Joey.
Team Joey was born out of a boy, young man named Joey Keller. Mm-hmm. And actually, when he was in the hospital, he was so selfless that as he was laying there, he still kept meeting all of these friends and wanting to do something for them. He felt so bad for what they were going through, even knowing that he himself was battling cancer. He would go home and get his Legos and bring them in and find friends to donate them. And as this went on, people were so inspired. Unfortunately, Joey lost his life to the battle of cancer. And what he did do was he continued to inspire others and still does. And that's what created Team Joey. And his parents, they are just amazing people. What they've dedicated their lives to now is this group that they call Team Joey, which is a Heroes Foundation program, and they continue to bring Legos. We actually just saw them this morning at Riley Hospital. We did a little performance there. It was wonderful, and they went up afterwards on the ward, and they handed out Legos to the children. So in addition, actually, to this particular event, we have many other things that we're doing, and one of those is collecting Legos at many different restaurants throughout the state
and also in our studio.
Yes.
That's great. So people can bring in Lego sets that they've bought, that they've purchased to donate and give, and then this is all part of the Team Joey and Joey's name. And as you said, he lost his battle with cancer about a year ago.
Yes.
But what a interesting and great idea to tie your dance performance into this cause and in the memory of the work of this really cool kid, it sounds like, right?
It's really neat. Today was very special, I think, not only for the kids who watched, but the students who danced. I think all of our students are benefiting from this more than anyone. So this wasn't our intention, but our students and our faculty and staff, we have been so inspired by this entire journey, and all of our kids are actually our students are getting connected with children who are in the hospital. hospital so that they have a face that they're tying to cancer, and they know that they're dancing for a different child in the hospital at each day. So
wow, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's become very personal.
That's a very specific connection then. Mm-hmm. And you're partnering both with the Peyton Manning Children's Hospital in Raleigh, correct?
Absolutely.
On yes. this. And then, so you've also got Chuck Pagano?
We do.
Coach Pagano's involved in this?
Yeah. Yes. Tom Zupancic is actually mm-hmm. going to be guiding the evening. Chuck Pagano is one of the first recipients of the Point to the Heroes Awards recipients.
Okay.
And he will also be bringing some razors with him, I think, that evening. I've been told that some of our board members are going to be shaving their head bald. And Coach
yeah,
it's going to
be a custom makeover.
Wow. That's going to be pretty wild.
So
this will all be at the IMA at the Toby Theater. And so this is coming up. This event is actually coming up quite soon. This is on October 4th? Okay. And but it will be an evening. It'll be a fundraiser, and it'll have these other events, but it'll also have the dance concert going on as well.
Absolutely.
And then there's another performance of the dance concert the week later.
Absolutely. And for those people who can't get tickets for October the 4th, mm-hmm. They can always come on October 12th to either two shows, one at 2 p.m. and one at 7:30 p.m. And we will be taking donations at that show as well,
okay.
or on both of those shows, to be able to pass along to Team Joey also. So we encourage people, if any of the shows are booked, we have three total shows that they can come to witness this type of event.
Very cool. But of course, the big night is on October 4th.
Absolutely.
And what a great evening this. And I mean, and this must be just such a really great experience for your dancers to be able to, you know, not just, you know, rehearse for a show and get ready for a great show, but to have a cause behind it. I mean, this is a little bit different for them. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all about kids, helping kids. And it's mm-hmm. the best lesson we can provide for our students. I was so inspired and proud of that, how they handle it. It's brought completely different meaning behind rehearsals, behind production. Students understand what they're doing, and they care that message very, 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 very well. It's just very important for us. You know, ESPAT is outreach program mm-hmm. and just simply life lesson for youth, for everybody. It was amazing experience.
Well, and it's also pretty cool that you're bringing back the Pulse piece. And Daryl, I know you've worked with the conservatory before on this piece. You are a percussionist. I mean, this is a pretty high energy type of piece for ballet.
Oh, it went amazing. The first time was last year,
mm-hmm.
and it was pulled together, and the feedback we got was phenomenal. The students, I don't know if you guys know, but you obviously do. They didn't want the show to end. They wanted to keep doing it every weekend.
As well as
so,
audience.
Yes.
It was obvious for us last year, okay, it's very powerful connection. We have to bring it back next year.
And the audience was, their feedback was they're either crying or laughing through the whole production. So
well, help
very
me
positive.
For listeners who aren't familiar with this piece, help me sort of visualize what this means to have such a highly intensive percussive type of music background for a ballet piece. Because those things sound as though they don't necessarily go together. In ballet, you think of as being so melodic and such. But
it, you know, we thought the same thing. We gave this a shot, and it flew. And the dancers, they get into it. They're the young and through the oldest student they have, very into it. Love the music, the adrenaline, excitement of just having the percussion, the live drums mm-hmm. as play with the music we're playing with and the drum solos. So it was a winner.
And all types of percussion?
Or? All types.
Yes.
Symphony. Any rotogons, octagons, you know, toms, anything that I have, I played. So I brought it to the table.
Alonia, what would you like to add to that? Because it just sounds like such a great night.
It is. And students, we present contemporary choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the best, actually, creations we did in the past, maybe 3 years. We have a great, phenomenal choreographer, Sergei Sergeyev, and some of his work, some of my work, and it's great. We all get together to work for this production,
mm-hmm.
and it's great story behind as well, behind that production. It's about dream, little boy dreaming to become musician and little girl dreaming to become ballerina, and it's evolution of dancer and musician and their journey on the way to their dream. And message behind never give up. Mm-hmm. Always believe in your dream.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like just such a great night. And you do the full production, correct, of Pulse as part of this fundraiser? Is that
absolutely.
So you've got that plus all the other stuff going on. And again, if people can't make it on the 4th, they can come back on the 12th at 2 or 7 to see it again as well. Just if you would, tell me just a little bit of some of the reactions you've had from your students as far as being a part of this, either the dance piece itself or the involvement with this cause.
Well, we just... students, we had very big presentation. Dr. Adam came and mm-hmm. we had about 1 hour.
And he's the doctor who's on your board of directors,
that's
right?
That's right. That's okay. our mm-hmm. Board member. Mm-hmm. And he's fantastic person. It's just one of the biggest heart I ever met in my life. And he just simply was speaking with students and explain what's happened with Joy Keller and what is this cause behind, what is Team Joy Foundation. And during 1 hour, it was parents and students invited. It was very quiet and students was listening. Some of them been in tears. And today when we've been performing in the Riley Hospital, it was very hard for everybody. We did our best, but I know I saw students' eyes as they performing. It's completely different than before. I know they bring in so much with them from this experience, and I know they will be a better people. Is they going to make this world better?
That's pretty cool. So, you know, Missy, you mentioned earlier about people can make donations of unopened Lego sets to restaurants. They get a discount off their bill if they do so. I'm assuming you've got that information on your website.
We do. You can go to either our website at IndianaBalletConservatory.org or you can go to PointToTheCure.org. We have two separate websites. We've put a lot of attention into making sure this particular event and this new foundation of Point to the Cure that we are presenting has its own voice as well.
And so, again, that's Point with an E on the end,
P-O-I-N-T-E. Thank you. Yes, it's so common to mm-hmm. me. That's right. Yes, Point with an E on the end.
Now, I do want to ask you one other question. We've talked a lot about Team Joey, but you mentioned earlier that it's a Heroes Foundation program. What is
yes.
Heroes Foundation?
It is a larger, it's part of a larger umbrella, mm-hmm. and Heroes Foundation is the largest group. They actually bring in Cancer Foundation research for many different parts of cancer.
Okay.
Team Joey is specifically for pediatric cancer research. That's what makes it a little unique and different, actually.
Very good.
So, yeah. Part about kids helping kids. That's what we're hoping this will all be about. So,
such yes. a cool thing. What you guys are doing is very unique and different and very special. Congratulations on your great work, and I hope you have a great weekend of performance. Thank you both, or thank you all three for being here so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
Travis.
It.
Travis DiNicola with Elena Yakaleva, Randall, Daryl Randall, and Missy Rust from the Indiana Ballet Conservatory. You can get more information about their Pulse Point to the Cure fundraising event at IndianaBalletConservatory.org. Again, IndianaBalletConservatory.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
It all started with the annual picnic and reunion held the first Saturday of August on the near south side of Indianapolis. The neighborhood was bounded by South Street, Morris Street, Madison Avenue, and West Street, and it was home to a large and diverse immigrant community dominated by African American and Jewish settlers, the former mostly from the south of the U.S. and the latter mostly from abroad. Sociology professor Dr. Susan Hyatt was intrigued and came by to tell Sharon Gamble how she and her IUPUI students delved into the history of a neighborhood largely demolished when I-70 was built, and ended up publishing a book about the research called The Neighborhood of Saturdays.
So tell us about how this project came to be. What was the generating idea or the generating incident?
Thank you, Sharon. I appreciate being here. The generating incident was actually a chance encounter with an African-American woman whose family had lived on the South Side, and she told me that every year they had a picnic which brought together former residents of the neighborhood in the local park, Babe Denny Park, it's known as now, for this big neighborhood reunion and picnic. And I was very fascinated that this neighborhood, which was largely dispersed by the construction of I-70, felt so strongly about the bonds that they had once shared, that they continued to come together, even though they're scattered all over the city and even all over the country. People come to that picnic from other parts of Indiana and other parts of the U.S. So they invited me to come to the picnic, and it's always the first Saturday in August. So the original title for the book was First Saturday in August, about this picnic reunion. But when I first started interviewing people about why they felt so strongly about their neighborhood, they began reminiscing about their Jewish neighbors. And that led me to try to track down some of those former Jewish neighbors, which I did. And we brought everybody back together, and we realized that and we decided to call the book The Neighborhood of Saturdays because of the first Saturday in August picnic and the Jewish observance of Sabbath on Saturday.
And along the way, you got a lot of students, a lot of your students involved.
We did. It started out as a student project. It ran 2 years. So two classes of students went out, and they did really most of the work, and they did all the interviewing and helping to collect and archive the photos and all of that work.
So kind of an oral history project.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about, because, you know, a lot of our listeners don't remember when I-70 didn't run through the city. When did that happen? Remind us.
In the early 70s.
Yeah. And while in some ways it was a terrific thing for the neighborhoods that it torpedoed, dispersed, devastated, it's all an awful thing.
Well, it is. And I mean, we've done a lot of neighborhood tours with some of the elders from both communities who used to live there. And people will point to one of the ramps onto I-70 and say, oh, and that's where my house used to be. Ugh. And that's where, the movie theater was. And all of these landmarks that are essentially now ramps onto I-70.
Mm-hmm. Some of our listeners may remember our conversation a few months ago with Georgia Buchanan, who was the daughter of Greek immigrants, who talked about the Near South Side. The Near South Side of Indianapolis was as diverse over many decades as the Near West Side is now. So tell us a little bit about, obviously, African-American community there and a Sephardic Jewish community. Explain what led to that.
Well, I think of I'm a relative newcomer to Indianapolis, so I'm sure your listeners know more about this than I do. But I think of the South Side as having been the gateway to the city.
Sure.
For African-Americans migrating up from the South and for a number of European groups who, as you point out, it wasn't just the Jewish community. It was Greeks, Italians, Germans,
Irish,
everybody. And there was a large Jewish community on the South Side. The South Side was once the center, really, of the Jewish community. And the only remnant of that is Shapiro's Deli, which we're all familiar with. And there are two Jewish communities in Indianapolis, really. One we call the Ashkenazic community, and that's people of East European, Russian origin, and the Sephardic community, which you just mentioned, which is folks who trace their origin back to Spain prior to the Spanish Inquisition in 1492. And when they were expelled, really, from Spain and Portugal, they went to many parts of the world, but one of the key parts that they went to was the Ottoman Empire, because the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire invited the Jews to come and settle there. So this particular Sephardic community on the South Side traces their origins, and the origins don't go that far back. It's the parents of the elders whom we interviewed, to two cities, to a city that was once called Monastir, which is now Bitola in southern Macedonia, and a city called Salonika, which is now Thessaloniki in northern Greece. And I actually had the privilege to visit those two cities this past spring.
Ooh, cool.
So that was very exciting and interesting.
Yeah. So we have people coming from overseas. We have people coming up from the South and obviously from all over the place within the United States. Tell us a little bit about the relocation organizations.
You mean that reorganized, that relocated immigrants?
Yeah.
Well, the South Side was the center of the Jewish community in all, I think, well, in the period of the early 20th century, I think all the Jewish immigrants basically came through the South Side. The Ashkenazi community remained for a long time, too, so it was also, the Jewish community was also in itself very diverse, mm-hmm. but that community started very early migrating up to the North Side, and there was a settlement house on the South Side, which was known as the Communal Building, and you must pronounce it Communal Building, or
not
people
communal.
Will correct. Not
yeah.
communal. I've been corrected on this point many times. Always known as the Communal Building. And the Communal Building basically functioned as a kind of an Americanization sort of center for these new immigrants, Jewish immigrants. They had English classes there, citizenship classes, you know, religious services, youth projects, all kinds of activities. But the communal center also opened up to other populations who lived on the South Side. So we have many reminiscences from African-American folks who also spent time in the Communal Building when it was located. Its AIR organization now is the Concord Neighborhood Center.
Mm-hmm.
When the demographics of the neighborhood had changed so much, really before actually I-70, but more after World War II, the Jewish Communal Building got turned over to a local committee and became the Concord Neighborhood Center. And it was located, I'm not going to remember now, even though I've driven by that lot many times,
mm-hmm.
but a little south of where it is now. And now it's located on Meridian, about two blocks south of Shapiro's.
People might be as familiar with the Concord Cemetery as they are with the community
Perhaps.
Center. Yeah.
Perhaps. So the community center is still very active and thriving, and they were a very important partner to us in carrying out this work.
I'm kind of taken in the book by the stories of people who were, first of all, maybe who immigrated to New York City or somewhere else on the East Coast, and then decided, well, maybe I'll go inland. Maybe I'll see what's in, you know, further away. But also people who came by train, who maybe wanted to go someplace else or were intending to go to Chicago, but got off because the train stopped here and thought, well, this looks promising.
Mm-hmm.
And there were jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, I think people will know who've lived in the city a lot longer than I have that the South Side was a very thriving kind of manufacturing center. And there were also several poultry houses
uh-huh.
and slaughterhouses. I mean, people listening might remember or know something about Kingens
uh-huh.
and Stark and Wetzel. And there were a lot of jobs to be had. And so particularly the African-American community was very drawn to the South Side because of the easy availability of those jobs. The Jewish community, I mean, no one actually knows how the first Sephardic family came to be there, but there is a kind of a good possibility from the research that I've done, and maybe this is what you meant about the relocation agencies. There was an agency based in New York, and that agency was It was a little bit dubious in its politics. It was started by German Jews who had come to the United States in the 1800s and had been very assimilated in Germany and were very assimilated in the United States. And when all these kind of unwashed masses started pouring in from Eastern Europe and Southern Europe, they became very worried that that would spark anti-Semitism if people congregated on the cities along the East Coast where there were already large Jewish populations. So they began actually actively dispersing Jewish families to smaller cities in the Midwest, the Far West, and the South. So a lot of people, actually one of the people we interviewed, Judge William Levy, he actually recalled his parents talking about an agency having sent them to live in Indianapolis. So I think some of those early families may have come kind of unexpectedly through that route, and then friends and neighbors of theirs join them here.
You know, it's like any city's immigration story. Sometimes there's no particular reason other than my great aunt Grace lives there,
right.
and it seems like a good
right.
place, so I'll go over and see what it's like, and
Absolutely.
We'll go from there.
And there was a very large clothing factory here called Kahn's.
Mm-hmm.
Kahn's Tailoring. It was nationally known. And they were a German-owned company, German-Jewish-owned company, but they took a lot of the Sephardic immigrants and hired them. And as was true of many of the large companies in that era, they also sponsored citizenship classes and leisure activities and so on. But a lot of the Sephardic families who migrated, they were tailors or seamstresses. So they already had experiences in the needle trades. And so Kahn's really seized upon that and hired a lot of those folks as the workforce.
You know, Indiana is famous for Hoosier hospitality. And the other, one of the other overarching themes that transcend the different essays is how, no matter what your cultural background was on the Near South Side, as likely as not, your neighbors would look after you. You would look after each other. It was, some people might find that surprising in Indianapolis, which has traditions of, well, this section of town is where the Irish immigrants live, mm-hmm. and this is where the Greek immigrants live. But on the Near South Side, it was not that rigid.
It was not. And one of the other surprising aspects of life on the South Side that we learned about is the schools were not ever officially segregated up to eighth grade. So up through eighth grade, everybody in the book went to school together at either School 22, School 6, or School 12, mm-hmm. but mostly School 22, which no longer exists. And it's actually, it used to be where the Concord Center is now, mm-hmm. at that corner. And this project really reinforced to me the importance of early childhood education being integrated, because that's really what created and sustained the bonds among people, was their shared experience of going to school together and playing together in the local playgrounds. The playground or the park that now hosts the picnic, Babe Denny Park, that used to just be called Michael Street Park, and everybody had stories about Michael Street Park. So the fact that kids really mixed at a very early age, I think, was what made the history of this community so unique.
Mm-hmm. What's the next step in the life of this project and this book? What do you want to happen from now on?
Well, it's the gift that keeps on giving and keeps me still very busy. We're planning a program, actually. It's a little bit into the future now, on April 6th at the Jewish Community Center, which mm-hmm. will be a panel discussion with participants, elders who participated in the book project, but also including some of the students who have worked on it, who carried out the interviews. So we're still hoping to create opportunities in the city to talk about it, not so much to promote the book, but just to let people know that there was this history. I think Indianapolis, like every other city in the U.S., has a very difficult racial history, and our country as a whole has a very traumatic history of race. But I think it's important to acknowledge that, but it's also important to acknowledge that there were other stories going on simultaneously, and that even in the era of Jim Crow, there was this community where people did come together across these boundaries of race and also religion, and really formed some very, very close bonds that were amazingly kind of reactivated in the course of doing this project. So people have continued to meet and have continued to talk and want to continue doing work and outreach that's associated with the old neighborhood and with the project.
Sharon Gamble with IUPUI Sociology Professor Dr. Susan Hyatt. Learn more about the book at neighborhoodofsaturdays.com. A portion of the proceeds benefits the Concord Neighborhood Center.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Joyeux jour de l'automne.
Pardon moi? Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Happy almost International Translation Day, and happy autumn.
Happy autumn and International Translation Day. Well, yeah, we have to figure out different languages that we can say that calendar that we call
What'll we do
in, right? It sounds like it's, yeah, I mean, well, not quite qu'est-ce que c'est, but it's, yeah, that's close. Well, so what will we do, Sharon, on National Translation, International Translation Day?
This Saturday, if you're hearing us Thursday night, you can plan a little bit ahead. If you're hearing us Saturday morning, hey, you're not doing anything interesting tonight yet anyway. You might as well come over to Indy Reads Books this Saturday night, the 28th, from 6:30 to 8:30, to celebrate International Translation Day. I don't know what else you were planning to do on International Translation
That's what
Day,
you do on International
But there are
Translation
featured
Day.
Readings translated and performed in English, original texts translated from Spanish and Polish, and maybe more, because you know how events at Indy Reads Books go. Sometimes there's audience participation. I'm just
you
saying.
You just never know.
More information at IndyReadsBooks.org.
Very cool. Hey, coming up next weekend, something to plan for is it's... basically, the Smithsonian offers something called Free Museum Day Live.
Yeah.
And museums that are affiliated with the Smithsonian in any way do live admission on September 28th, so next Saturday. And this is pretty cool. So something to do this weekend. This Saturday, if you're listening right now. So one of the museums included is Connor Prairie with their Interactive History Park, which is, in fact, Indiana's only Smithsonian affiliate. And so they're opening their doors with free admission on Saturday. And you can do lots of cool things. They got a lot of special activities, including White River Past and Present, celebrating the White River with this opportunity to explore its banks and observe the plant and animal life. You can take part in some cool discussions and learn more about that. That goes on from 1:30 to 3:30. They're also having Hoosier Ladies Aside with three side saddle riders portraying the Ladies Aid Society at the Civil War. That'll be going on from 10 a.m. to 4:30.
Can I just say, it's hard enough to ride a horse
And then to do it side
what
saddle.
What is now the normal way, let alone to try to do it side saddle. Yeah. That's really cool.
Well, they'll be doing formal riding presentations at noon and at 3 p.m., so you can check that out. There you go, Sharon. You can find out how they do that. And then also, let's see, author Kathy Logheed, who's Hamilton County author, longtime Connor Prairie volunteer, is going to be discussing her newly released historical novel, The Spirit Keeper. And they'll also be doing some performances from that from 1 to 4 p.m., and copies of the book will be available for purchase. All types of cool things going on out at Connor Prairie that day, but also another museum that's participating downtown. If you don't feel like driving out to Connor Prairie, or maybe if you like driving downtown, whatever it may be, the Rhythm Discovery Center. If you've never been there, it is such a cool drumming up some business for him, Sharon. It is such a cool space that it's sort of below the Weber Grill and the Arts Garden,
yeah.
And it is a national museum of percussion and of percussion instruments and drummers, and it's such a cool thing. And if you've never done it before, then this would be a great day to do. There's over 150 percussion instruments to play there. Very interactive, a great thing to take your kids to, and it is also going to have free admission on Saturday. There you go.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Love it, love it, love it. Hey, your chances are growing slender to see Beef and Board's presentation of Father of the Bride. It's running just through September 29th. It's a comedy about letting go and letting your kids grow up. Very charming. It's actually very family appropriate, especially if you have young people in your life who are getting to be close to marriageable age. Learn more at beefandboards.com, and is spelled out.
Well, Heartland Film Festival has had a lot of big announcements, including their 2013 lineup, and it is going to be kicking off. Heartland is always such a great event. You can't plan early enough for this. It kicks off on Thursday, October 17th, and they are having their opening night at the Toby, and that's going to feature a special premiere of the movie Gimme Shelter. And over the next couple weeks, we'll be talking more about all the different Heartland movies, but it is the 22nd annual Heartland Film Festival. It takes place from October 17th through the 26th. It's going to include over 134 independent, well, not just over, exactly, 134 independent films from exactly 76 countries, including a whole bunch of short films, because they are an Academy Award-winning qualifying festival for the short films category. So if you always wonder about what those films are, this is when you can get a chance to see it. So very, very cool 10-day event, and there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. Of course, you can get more information at trulymovingpictures.org.
Wonderful. Hey, chances running out to see the current Hoosier Salon annual exhibition. It's their 89th year, and it's on view through this Saturday at the Indiana History Center. Juried paintings, drawings, and sculptures by some of Indiana's most distinguished artists. Check that out, the Hoosier Salon show at the Indiana History Center through this Saturday, HoosierSalon.org, for more information about that.
This is a really interesting exhibit at the Heron Galleries at the Heron School of Art and Design. Warriors turned artists facilitate healing with paper handmade from their own uniforms. The show is called Combat Paper, and it opens on September 25th, goes through November 16th, and it is featuring work that's actually created on paper from the recycled uniforms of soldiers in combat. And the artists who, I guess, use their own paper from their own uniforms. Really curious about the show. Looking forward to going to check it out. And that is at Heron.
That's fascinating. Something off the beaten path for certain. Hey, the Juilliard String Quartet is opening the Ensemble Music Society's new season. Coming up pretty quickly, Friday, October 11th. And pay attention, because they're at a slightly different venue. They're going to be at the Schrott Center for the Arts at Butler University. So not a Wednesday night, a Friday night. Still at 7:30. This one is not at the Indiana History Center Basile Auditorium, but it's at Schrott Center for the Arts. On the program, an arrangement for string quartet of Johann Sebastian Bach's Art of the Fugue. Also, a world premiere by a composer named Jesse Jones called Whereof Man Cannot Speak. And just to round things out with a great standby classic, the Opus 59 No. 3 Razumovsky Quartet by, of course, Beethoven. So, Juilliard String Quartet, wonderful players, Friday, October 11th. Learn more online.
If you are a fan of Bob Fosse, and who isn't, well, I am, then you might want to check out Valerie Pettiford, All That Jazz, at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club. She is a true diva. She is a triple threat singing,
easy for
acting,
you to say.
Dancing. There we go. So she is a Fosse-trained performer. She was in Chicago and The Wild Party and Showboat and Fosse, which earned her a Tony nomination. And she is an amazing dancer and singer, and she's going to be performing, probably more singing than dancing, at Cabaret at the Columbia Club, October 3rd and 4th. And they're also going to have a special drink that night, Sharon, called Fosse's Dream, that's going to only be available at her show.
I love it.
And it features gin, vermouth, a little B&B, and some bitters. Should be kind of
fun.
Oh,
my goodness. Aspirin at the door on your way out for the next morning. Hey, the Idlejord Museum Store is hosting and sponsoring a live auction of Navajo rugs. That's coming up, speaking of that weekend you were just talking about, coming up on October 5th. And the rugs range from $100 to $10,000, with the average rug selling for $350. So if you think, it's out of my price range, think again. You can learn more at idlejorg.org. But just to tempt you, if you happen to be a member, or maybe you want to become a member just for this, there's a member preview from 8:30 to 9:30 in the morning with a light continental breakfast. You can meet the auctioneers and learn about Navajo rugs and the joy and interesting aspects of collecting rugs. There's a preview for the general public at 9:30 to 11, and the auction starts at 11:30 on October 5th. So idlejorg.org to learn more about that auction.
Hey, you know, speaking about the benefits of being a member, the Matisse exhibit at the IMA opens on October 13th.
Doesn't
but if
it,
you
though?
Are a member, you can get preview tickets for the 11th or 12th. And in fact, you can still become a member now and get those preview tickets, which means you get free admission to Matisse and you don't have to wait in line in the same way when the show opens to the general public. So that's a cool reason to become a member of the IMA right now.
And speaking of the Matisse exhibit, pay attention, because there are some really interesting allied events, including a talk about the Cone sisters who were
from Baltimore, who collected all this
work. Collected all these, and they were kind of these, you know, conservative maiden auntly sort of sisters who collected this artist who was, you know, completely radical at the
right.
time. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that show. Hey, something else I got here, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater in concert October 4th and 5th at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts. This is kind of a fun show that they're doing. It's basically company favorites. They have pulled together repertoire by request, and last season they did this with pieces selected by audience members, and they're doing that again, and it's also with dancers from the company who are picking their favorite pieces from the past repertoire that are putting together. And so you can come see what the audience thinks their favorites are, what the dancers thinks their favorites are, see some old, see some new, see something borrowed, something blue. I'm starting to sound like Matt Sosie's show now. But anyways, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater in concert October 4th and 5th, 7 p.m. up at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts.
You know what's just around the corner.
What's that, Sharon?
Well, we've been mentioning a lot of events in early October, and October means it's time for Haunted House and Creepy Scary Tales. You do that so well. Do you have, like, a third career as a...
It's my favorite sound effect. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
It's the only one I got.
Okay. Well, hey, so use it or lose it, right? So comedy sports has this reputation, not just in Indianapolis, but any place there's a comedy sports franchise. They have a reputation for being family friendly. However, there's always the exception that proves the rule. Their late night shows that they do periodically are adults only. And in fact, September 27th through November 1st at Comedy Sports, they're doing a Friday night 10 p.m. show.
Very cool.
It's called Headless Horseman Unscripted. It's the adults only spin on the classic tale of Ichabod Crane and the ghost with no noggin. There's no referee. Their words, not mine. There's no referee, no brown bag foul, and attendees must be 17 or older to attend. The audience is encouraged to shout suggestions when prompted and to contribute to the blind line bucket throughout the show. You have to go to find out what that is.
You have to go to find out.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Sounds fun. Well, Sharon, as much as we've just covered, I know there's still even more to cover. We are actually out of time for this week's calendar that we call
What Do We Do?
We'll be back next week.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The original and fabulous German Fest is a day-long indoor-outdoor festival that celebrates all things German at the Athenaeum on Saturday, October 12th. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Athenaeum Foundation's Cassie Stockham to learn more.
Cassie, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to have you talking about the original and fabulous German Fest.
Thank you, Travis. Great to be here.
This is fun. How many years have you guys been doing this at the Athenaeum?
Yes, it's the fifth original and fabulous. Yes.
Awesome.
5 years.
Very good. So this is coming up on Saturday, October 12th.
Yep.
Noon to 8 at the Athenaeum in downtown Indianapolis, just off Mass Ave. And, you know, the one thing, of course, that I look forward to each and every year are the wiener dog races, because that's just a whole bunch of fun. And I'm not actually making that up. You actually do have wiener dog races.
We have real wiener dog races, and we have to have bleachers because there are so many
people that
went to see those wieners. Yes, it's pretty funny.
But you guys have a lot of other cool stuff going on, and new stuff, too, this year. But German food, drink, music. Tell me about this event, because it is about celebrating German culture, which is, of course, sort of the foundation of the Athenaeum.
It is. It's an opportunity where most of the German groups all come together for one day and to celebrate our Germanness. So you will have everything from the German dancers to the manicore, the singing groups, to the Sanger Corps is going to be providing their brats and sauerkraut and the whole bit. So it's really is a fun day. And the Germans, as you probably remember, Travis, are fairly physical people. So we actually start the day with a 5K Lederhosen race.
Mm-hmm.
And people come dressed in their Lederhosen and they run this 5K race. And the fun thing that's fun is if you come dressed in German attire, you get a free drink ticket.
Well, then, so, that's encouraging.
So we encourage not just the runners, but everyone to come.
So you don't even have to be German. Just have some German attire.
Exactly. I mean, there you know. Go. We can pretend everywhere. We're all Irish one day a year, too, aren't we? I mean,
you know, you mentioned the physicality part with, of course, there's the 5K, but you also have the Bavarian Stone Lift Contest. You've been doing the strongman thing for a while.
Yeah, it's not only strongman, but strongmen and women. Mm-hmm. And it, I have to say, it is truly a spectacle, incredibly popular, watching these people lift some really heavy weights. Fairly, you know, not necessarily big people, but people that have just built up their capacity to lift. And yeah, it is. It's fun. So that's become an annual event as well.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's kind of amazing to watch it in person.
I don't know how they do it.
God, it just looks so...
Not my back.
Now, a big thing that you've added on this year, the beer games. Like the thirsty games. It's not like the Hunger Games. It's the... So the beer games. Tell me about this, because this is actually... This is kind of a fun thing. Teams are going to be forming... I'm still not quite sure what they're competing in, but they will try to win money for charities of their choice.
Yes,
right?
Actually, it's a great idea that staff came up with. So the beer games, you are going to be you. I'm saying you. No, Travis, we're going to have you up there. So no, I'm just kidding.
You never know.
Things like holding out your beer steins full of beer to see who can hold them the longest.
Ooh, okay, so that's hard.
That is pretty hard. I'm curious to see how long people can do that. Beer relay races to see how little they spill, how quickly they can pass back and forth. You know, that should be fun. This is kind of funny. It's the 9-pin cow toss game. Now, in Germany, they don't have 10-pin bowling. They have 9-pin bowling.
Okay.
And you remember we had Spam-a-lot in our building?
Yes, yes, you did.
But we have this crazy cow that's a result of the Spam-a-lot. So we are good.
Right, you guys had Spam-a-lot over the summer at the Bob Direck's Theater, and that was part of that.
It was wonderful. Yeah, it was a great.
Yeah. So you got a cow left over from that.
We have a cow left over from that, and so Got Milk. You know, it's the Got Milk 9-pin cow toss, and so the teams will be blindfolded, and they're going to have to be talked through to how to toss through this cow. So that's going to be actually pretty comical. The thing that I'm getting a big kick out, well, there's two more games. Actually, a grape stampede. There people are going to have to smash grapes and fill up their vial to see how much who gets the most amount of juice out of their vial and then run to the other side. Yeah, it's good.
Wine with the beer.
Wine with the beer. And then the last thing is called finger hawking.
Yeah, what is a finger hawking contest?
Fortunately, they can't see us because you kind of start by... with a finger with the other to another person.
Yes.
This is an actual German very big event. Yeah, it's hilarious. Two people sit across the table and there is just
and they give each other the finger?
To kind of start the games. Okay. And then the leather strap comes out and they put that finger in the strap.
Ah.
And it's basically like a tug of war. It's almost and they brace themselves.
Wow.
I mean, you have to have someone there. Two people, it's four people because a person behind you has to brace you when you
hold
fall.
Hold on. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so it's
so this
it's,
is actually, I mean, this will
gonna,
take some skill and talent. And
take a little bit
of course,
strategy.
People might be drinking some German beer throughout it.
Yeah.
Teams, you're going to have 30 teams of 5 members each.
Yep.
And so the winning team gets to make quite a gift.
$750 to a charity of their choice.
How cool is that?
Well, and there's two other
That's
opportunities.
Great.
Yeah, isn't that fun? So there's 200 opportunities for making money. You can win another $200 to the team that has the most spirit. Fun. So that's fun. And then another $200 to the team that brings their most fans in. We're going to give people a code and they can get a discount to German Fest and we're going to track to see that. And there's another $200 your team can win. So, yeah, we think it's just a fun way to give back to the community and then also it's a win-win for us.
So, again, the German Fest itself goes from noon to 8 p.m. on Saturday the 12th at the Athenaeum. When do the beer games take place? Is that throughout the whole day?
Yeah, it's going to be, it's pretty much going to start at 12:30, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to run probably the last team. They said around 6:30. So, yeah, they're going to go off and on all day because there's 30 different teams that are going on. Yeah. And the Wiener Dog races start. They're going to start this year at 3:30. We're going to close off Michigan Street then for the Wiener Dog races after the race stops. They'll go up there. and there's a large kids area. We've got the two tents that are going on as well with all the different German music and brouhaha going on. So it's just a fun, one of those fun, kitschy events.
Now, of course, all of this is done to not just raise awareness, but raise some money for the Athenaeum Foundation, which you are the president of, and that is the foundation that takes care of the Athenaeum building.
Absolutely, it does. And if you happen to have been by the building recently, you will have noticed something changed. The canopy over the Y is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it just brings the attention. There's some work that we need to do on the facade of the building. That's a beautiful building. She just continually needs a lot of maintenance. So we're always just trying to find ways to be self-sufficient, support ourselves, and at the same time, just let people know that if you ever have an opportunity to write that check, we'll always take that.
It is an amazing building. And like I said, it has the Y. It has many other organizations, Young Actors Theater, lots of different groups that meet there on a regular basis. Of course, the Rathskeller. But there's a lot of maintenance that goes on to keep that building going.
It's $250,000 a year just to heat and cool it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and we put a little over $100,000 a year into the building. Candidly, it could probably be $250,000. I mean, easily. We've got quite a bit of deferred maintenance. Now, the building is substantially, it's sound, but we need tech pointing, we need cleaning, and those are not very sexy asks. So.
Sure. How old is the building?
1894.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and it's an amazing building. It really is in some ways. I mean, it's such the center of culture for so much that goes on along Mass Avenue.
Oh, we like to think we helped to create the hub. I mean, it's a great community, as you know. We love having Indy Reads down at the other end. It's just been a fun, fun place to work and.
Well, we are looking forward to helping maintain the building, celebrating all things German, and seeing the competition at the beer games during the original and fabulous German Fest. Cassie Stockham, so much for coming in. Thanks so much for coming in today.
People can go and buy tickets in advance at athfound.org, so we would love to have you. Great. Thanks, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with the Athenaeum Foundation's Cassie Stockham. The original and fabulous German Fest starts at noon on Saturday, October 12th. For more information, visit AthenaeumFoundation.org, AthenaeumFoundation.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll get a preview of this year's IRT season.
I'll find out about some ghost stories that Storytelling Arts has up their sleeve.
And I'll check out how IMOCA is rediscovering architect Gan Rutenberg with his grandson. Plus, there'll be our calendar of events we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.